welcome to episode number 99 of the Peer Geek Podcast. And as always, it's a pleasure to have you listening. And I'm joined today by Joel Smeeds. How are you?
Good, thank you, Jared. Thanks for having me.
Welcome. Where are you in the world? Are you joining us from on today's episode?
I'm in Vientiane in Laos, and I'm at home at the moment. Chose early morning time when everyone else was still asleep.
Yeah, and we were just talking before we started that your journey in this like educational teaching world has had you visiting many different continents and countries, but home base for you like is Melbourne, Australia, or in Australia, but you've been all over the place. Can you just tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I was in Melbourne and taught for a few years there before I decided to go and look at the overseas scene, and went to England first.
And as many Aussies do.
As many Aussies do, yeah. It's good to get recruited to there, and pretty straightforward. Then I was in Oman for a little bit and moved on to Latvia. And in Latvia, it was my first international IB school doing the PYP.
Yep.
After that, we were in Angola for 3 years, my wife and I, mm-hmm. and she's a teacher as well. And now we're in Laos, and we're into our seventh year at VIS, Vientiane International School in Laos.
Isn't it amazing that this career, you have the opportunity to do that? Like you can sort of see the planet, get a feel for different cultures and places, and all the while you're still teaching that same core job that you would be doing if you were here in Australia or anywhere else. It's quite extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, fantastic. We've enjoyed it so far. I met my wife in Latvia.
Wow.
She's an American background. She taught in China before she moved to Latvia as well. And then from there, yeah, we've done another couple of posts and we're enjoying where we are at the moment. But, you know, of course, you're always starting to look on, oh, where's another place we could go teach next? And we haven't done South America yet. What about South America?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it sounds like you have done pretty much nearly all the continents by...
Close, there.
Yeah, getting close. So what's the appeal with the... obviously, the travel part plays a huge role, but is there other things at play as well that sort of entice you to want to stay in the international school scene?
Yes, well... As I mentioned before, my wife's actually American, and sure. As it stands, Mara doesn't actually have a visa to live in Australia, and I don't have a visa to live in the States yet, mm-hmm. because when you do that, you've actually got to go live there permanently and stay for a while to make it all official, and we're enjoying doing this at the moment, so we're both like, well, we can't just choose to go to live for 1 year in Australia or mm-hmm. to go for 1 year to the States, because we... If I go to get the visa, I have to stay there for a long time to make it permanent. So we're not ready to do that at the moment, and we're just, let's keep on doing these international schools. So get to travel around, visit friends and family, and I've got a brother who's also an international school teacher, and we match up on holidays when holidays connect, and so it's really good, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great option for people listening that, you know, are visited teachers or any teacher for that matter, and they're looking for ways in which they could potentially take their family out and explore new work, you know, new places. So how do you actually get started with that? Because it's probably new to many people who are listening. Like, where do they go if they wanted to do the international school thing?
Yeah, certainly. We've been through a couple of recruiting agencies before. Search Associates is a big one that many people use, and they run recruiting fairs in different places throughout the world. There's Bangkok, Sydney, Dubai, London. There's also a couple of other international school services, and CIS, the Council of International School, run recruiting fairs a lot of the time. But there's also many other companies that you can get online with to mm-hmm. look for job placements and recruiting agencies, and you just enter your information, what you teach, your experience, and where you're willing to go and what you want to do. And at first it's a little bit, oh my goodness, where are we going to go? Where are we thinking of going? But after a bit of time, you know, you can see the pattern and figure out what sort of places you like and what you want to go to.
Yeah. So how has your teaching evolved over that period of time? Like, obviously you've worked in a lot of different schools and different sort of backgrounds. I'm sure there are some that have been more resourced than others. How has that impacted the teaching, and how was your teaching changed across the course of that time, thinking way back to when you first started in Australia?
Definitely changed. I would say the biggest change I've had and what I've really enjoyed is becoming connected with the IB schools and doing the PYP.
Yeah.
And I do with the PE now, and I really enjoy having the freedom that I have to be able to create units that I want within the PYP framework that can really work for the students at our school where they are at this moment. And the way we do connections and make connections with their classroom learning, what we can do between PE and carry over to issues and topics that they're covering in their classroom, as opposed to some other curriculums that I've taught in, structures where it's very regimented and this is what we're doing in, you know, term one, term two, term three, or term four.
Yeah.
With the IB stuff, I have great opportunity to create my own units within the framework and make it what I want, reflect on it, and change it totally up again. And when you've got a good coordinators as well, they let you get away or try many different things, you know, so that's great.
Yeah, that is cool. And that whole framework idea where you can sort of bring in other subject areas and have the learning happening across multiple different domains is really attractive. Yeah. And Dan Popescu, who's a Connected PE member and presenter at Connected PE conferences, he did like this whole parkour thing. And he used, obviously, the phys ed time to do the skills for parkour. It was gymnastic-esque. But then outside of that, there was all of this thing happening with, you know, art teachers doing their stuff, supporting that unit, and there was writing things happening. And you can just see how it becomes this really rich tapestry of more authentic learning. And I guess that was what happens at your school too.
Yeah, absolutely. What I really tried to do at the start of the year is to identify some units that the students are doing in their classroom that I can really make a good connection with. Oh, look, this unit here, there's something solid to try and connect to with some PE learning engagements that we can do. One example is a grade two unit. They look into forces and motion within a science unit they're doing. And when I looked at that and I thought, oh, some biomechanics sort of stuff popped out at me, and we could do experiments with push versus pull, experiments in the swimming pool with buoyancy, pushing kickboards underwater, testing the different forces. The best part of that unit was the trip to the bowling alley, of course, to roll different bowling balls down. I had them set up with the different size bowling balls and pushing them down the ramp, and observations on the force and the impact it makes when it's smashing down the pins. And but it just had a real impact on the students. And then they went back to their classroom and talked about, oh yeah, we talked about this and we've done these experiments in PE, and they were able to make connections to the unit that they were doing in the classroom.
Makes it more real. And you know, the problem with a lot of, you know, some of the more traditional curriculums is they are very siloed and very rigid, and, you know, you're in PE and you learn this, but then when you go to the next subject, there's no connection or no even thought that there should be connection, but realistically there are connections and we can explore them with great benefit. So is it right in saying that somewhere along this line, you working in the IB framework, you saw that technology could play one of those roles to help bridge connections as well?
Definitely. That's been a big change for me with the PE classes, adding more technology and new stuff. You know, as the years go on, we've added to what we've got in our PE department. Mm-hmm. But it's also, being able to open up the units more for deeper inquiry so students can really inquire a bit more and take charge of their own group work that they're doing, video record their own group work, put together their thing, watch videos, reflect on it, try something different again. With our iPads that we have at the moment now, students can, if they're working in a group on some activity or some inquiry, can go into search something by themselves in on the net, then go back to what they were doing, recording group work. So that has definitely deepened the inquiry, having greater technology.
Well, it makes things that weren't possible before possible. Like, you know, without the technology, the mere thought of going and researching a video of an elite performer and then contrasting that to yourself, it's not something that you can actually achieve. So, you know, the technology brings about more opportunities, and smart teachers like yourself leverage it. And it seems like you've had this this sort of affinity to the aquatic environment to test some of these things out, whether that's with the iPads or whether that's with some other tech. So, you know, what are some of the things that you've done in that aquatic environment that I've heard so much about?
Again, I tried to, well, I mean, we run swimming at the pool. A few years ago, we were fortunate enough to push to get a 25-meter pool and a 10 by 10-meter learn-to-swim pool built at the school, and that's been a big change for the aquatics program. So once that was built, of course, many parents are always interested in, you know, learn-to-swim programs and having students become really good at swimming. But I also wanted to make sure with that we're sticking to our PYP curriculum, and that we view the swimming pool as just another venue to continue learning what we want to do with our unit, not just get in the pool and swim laps up and down because we have a pool. So trying to make connections with units. Again, with the grade 2 unit, I was able to do some of those forces experiments in the pool and things like that. With other units, I've done lots of adventure challenges units where we can make different games and challenges in the units. Water-based frogger, leaping from mats to across to mats, across so to cool. mats to across the pool and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Different blindfolded, you know, we get goggles and darken the goggles out and doing blindfolded challenges in the pool, in the small pool. You know, can't do that in the deep pool. But and trying different things in the swimming pool other than just swimming laps and moving up and down.
Which is the typical sort of swimming and that a lot of schools still sort of stick to. And it has this either love it or loathe it sort of mentality. But, you know, if you look at how people interact in the pool environment, if they chose to do it on their own accord, it's usually a bit different to the just do laps idea. So
absolutely. And you see that on the weekend. We do a lot of – we open the pool up more over the last year for weekend community swimming at the pool. And when the students and parents come on the weekend, there's not just swimming laps up and down. But at the same time, we understand the balance. You know, parents, I'm a parent as well. We want our children to be able to learn and develop their swimming technique. Absolutely. So we have to try and find the balance between doing some standalone swimming and some great challenges and activities that they can do. And then if I can, find some connections to doing some what they're doing in the classroom and making some things there as well.
Yeah, that's the exact philosophy that we have with our swimming program. And it led us to build the Swim Games app, which was an opportunity to leverage some more fun activities that had a byproduct of some of the swimming skills that we were, you know, hoping to achieve.
Yes.
And because I just distinctly remember when I first turned up at the school and, you know, this is the list of things that you need to teach and do. And I just remember a lot of disengaged people and people deliberately forgetting their their swimming gear. And it just becoming this battle. But when we switched it to a different focus, these things happened organically. And, you know, we got results without really making them the priority. So, you know, I believe in that philosophy. So you mentioned something about GoPros to me earlier on in the conversation. Like, what were you using those for?
Initially started using GoPros just to record swimming styles, swimming strokes, techniques, sharing them online with parents. We use Seesaw as our online platform.
Awesome.
And initially starting to use that, but then I wanted to try to expand it so that, again, it's not just looking at swimming technique. So we've trialed a couple of different units. We did a unit in grade 3, I think it was, a movement composition focusing on gymnastics. And I thought, well, try and open it up. Is there it's not maybe any real unit that anyone else does anywhere, but some students, why don't we try some gymnastics movements in the water, in the small pool? You know, can we do forward rolls and backward rolls and do handstands in the water? Mm-hmm. And the kids, you know, some of the kids loved it. A small group said, this is fun. Let's give it a try. I didn't know what would really come of it, mm-hmm. but for that unit, they thought it was fantastic having the GoPro and holding it underwater and filming each other's movement composition that they created inside the small pool. And then
awesome.
They were able to upload that onto Seesaw and comment about it and write about how they constructed the routine and why they chose the movements in that composition that they chose to put in there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people underestimate just the pure value of simply seeing yourself on video. Like a lot of people get caught up in the idea of, well, okay, if I record it, then what are we going to do with the footage? Like, are we analyzing it? Are we comparing it mm-hmm. and contrasting it? But I mean, all that stuff is really valuable, but I think there's this inherent opportunity to just simply motivate and engage that we can't ignore. Like, I remember how powerful it was to see myself on video performing yeah. something when I was a young kid. So that opportunity alone is quite massive. And just the ability to share that with parents, and you mentioned Seesaw, and for those that aren't aware of what Seesaw is, it's like a digital portfolio tool. You capture footage and you assign them to student portfolios, and you can take that further, can't you? Like, you can give parents access to then yeah. view their own kids' material.
So that's actually a good safe part about Seesaw, is that you can secure it that only these parents or whoever you invite, grandparents, mm-hmm. through an email request to click on this link, and they will only be the people who can access that content that you put up for this student.
It's amazing.
So
it really is.
Select something to post, or the students post. We're trying to empower the students to post as much themselves. Then they select their name that they're involved. It'll tag them and send an email to their parents that there's a new posting for their student, and they can go up and have a look at it. And it's also a great way to get them to interact and do things. I've started this year putting more tasks onto Seesaw, mm-hmm. and the students then get a notification. Here's a task to do before we come to PE, and you've done a little bit of front loading
yeah.
as well, especially the grade fours and grade fives. They have actually all the students now, we've rolled out a one-to-one iPad device in the primary classroom. So mm-hmm. the grade four and five are using them nonstop, and they get their own emails, they get their own notifications. We can send them something and say, all right, get this ready for Wednesday's lesson, or yeah. something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the greatest part about the iPad and, you know, other tablet-style devices is just that they're so friction-free. They're so easy to use. There's
yeah.
high-level battery life. You know, they're intuitive. The experiences make sense. The opposite of this would be a tech device that might do the same thing, but you spend 10 minutes trying to log on and get access and find the page. But with the iPad, it's just very intuitive. So I think that's...
Well, that's right. That was only a matter of a few years ago where I didn't have the things I've got at the moment. We had a few flip cameras and some notebooks. But we tried to spend one lesson, for example, doing a reflection. I'd say, okay, let's stop and sit down for a few minutes, do a reflection at the end of this unit. Let's open up the notebooks and log on and fill out this form that I've created. I thought it would be wonderful. And it was taking 20 minutes to log on and get onto the network and yeah. all this sort of
yeah.
stuff. So it was, right, we have to fix that and change yeah. that.
And that's why the best experiences are those that have really been intuitive and efficient, and that's why I personally continue to advocate for these type of experiences in things like tablet and iPad devices and so on. And you know,
yeah.
I firmly believe that there isn't a perfect device. Like, I'm a fan of Android, I'm a fan of iOS, but they just have to be intuitive. They have to not use up too much time, and
yes,
they have to get a result.
Certainly,
yeah.
The other part with the reflection and immediate feedback you were talking about a bit earlier, using the iPads, one big changer for me has been having a screen and an Apple TV box within the classroom. And I've just finished the other day. We got one installed near front court, and we're getting it all connected up so that we're doing something on front court, we can video it. Stop, let's go over to the screen quickly mirror your iPad, press play and show the students right there again, and let's try again. You know, it's been really amazing doing that.
Well, the argument here is that you've turned your PE classroom into a classroom. You know, it's not it's not just a place where people get active, which is still how a lot of programs think about phys ed, is just one goal, which is get active and moving. And don't get me wrong, there should be that element to it, but we are a classroom. We are supposed to impart things and have outcomes. And if you've got a space and a display to make that possible, you just make it easier to do that stuff.
Yeah.
And I get frustrated with departments that don't understand that value. So you guys obviously having some good wins with that.
And I'm discovering as well that the more I'm using these devices that we can, if I just set up an activity, which might be an inquiry-based stations activity, just let the kids go for it and try different things at different stations, and they might see something on a device to try. All right, I'm going to try a skill, and that they just get involved more. We're not stopping talking about some instructions or how to play this game, how to try that. It's just short, sharp stations, but they keep moving for a lot of the lesson, and they're more engaged, they're more active because they're trying to access something different, something new. Let's try out this activity.
Love it. Big fan. So I know that you actually have a website as well that you sort of update with some swimming related material and other little thoughts and so on. Where can people go to find that?
That's PE Swim Stuff, or one word. PESwimstuff.com. I tried to think up of some groovy name a few years back after being encouraged by a couple of people, Andy Vasily in particular, who make a blog, get your stuff up on a blog. And so I thought, what can I do? Well, I wanted to add swimming in there as lot, because I tried to do as much swimming and PE and swim sort of stuff. So I came up with that name.
Yeah, I know. It's insane. It's how powerful that the blogging can really be. And, you know, you come up with this idea, peswimstuff.com, but, you know, to someone it's useful and they find some value. And to yourself, it's really valuable for your own reflective experience. You know, I look back at some of the stuff that I wrote in the early days and I almost cringe.
Yeah.
But that's the whole point of this thing. It's like, you know, it's a vehicle to improve. And the great part about it is it doesn't just have to be solo. You can share that. So I really thank you for putting work out there. And there will be links in the show notes at thepegeek.com/99 for episode 99. And you go and check out the work that Joel's doing. So thanks again for stopping by. It's an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to speaking with you
soon.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, mate.
Okay, cheers, bye.